All right. Well, yeah, like Mike said, Pastor Mike, my name is Tessa. I grew up going to church here, so there's obviously a lot of familiar faces. But for those of you who don't know or that I don't know, my parents are Sherry and David. And I grew up going here my whole life. And so I sat in those pews listening to Pastor speak. So every time that I can come and speak to you guys, it's an incredible privilege. And so just thank you so much for having me. But today, I'm going to talk about my most recent mission and passion and my most recent trip to Kenya. But more than that, I'm also going to talk about a ministry that I'm working under. But like Pastor said, I just loved his prayer before I even came up here about hope. And I love that he just prayed for me that the Spirit would be here, because I just want this testimony and my story just to reach you guys. And I just want it to light a fire inside of your hearts like it is lit a fire inside of mine. So, here I go. So my first trip to Kenya was actually last May. So I coach, for the past 2 years, I've coached women's basketball at the University of Mankato, which I felt the Lord really calling me to coach basketball, which I played college basketball, so it wasn't completely out of the blue, but it definitely wasn't my first choice, but I felt the Lord calling me there. And actually, the first game that I ever coached, we were playing USD, University of South Dakota, and that's where I met Tom, the other coach. He was coach of the opposing team. He came right up to me, and after a five-minute conversation, we're talking about Jesus, and he's inviting me to go to Kenya. So I understood why the Lord was calling me to Mankato, but he was telling me about this ministry that he works for and that he brings people to Kenya every single year, and so before the game started, he was like, "You want to pray about it and get back to me?" And I was like, "No, I don't need to pray about it. Like, I'm going." Because the God's already called us to go, right? In Matthew 28, he says, "Go out into all the world and share the good news." And the Lord's been putting Africa on my heart for a really long time, and I was just waiting for the opportunity. So, so that's how I first got connected to Kenya. So in May, a group of athletes and coaches, we got on a plane, we went to Kenya. Our mission was to work with a school called St. Jacob's. And if you can put up the first slide, that'd be great. So I traveled with a ministry called Simba Educational Ministries. And so it's a mission, a ministry based out of South Dakota. It's only been a nonprofit for 1 year, but God has done so much in 1 year. It's absolutely insane. You can see their mission up there. They have 5 points of ministry. It's sponsorship, health and wellness, widows and orphans, kingdom building, and stewardship. Their main mission right now, or their biggest mission, is sponsorship. So what they do is they get people from the United States to sponsor children in Kenya that are living on the streets, or their parents aren't able to afford education to go to school. And school in Kenya is very different than school here, obviously. Children don't get the privilege just to go to school. It's not a requirement. You have to pay to go to school. And there's a lot of poverty, so a lot of kids don't go to school. So they don't get an education, and a lot of times they end up on the streets. So this is huge. And just in 1 year, the school, it has 300 children, and over 170 of them are sponsored from people from the States. So just absolutely incredible what's going on in the Lord's favor on this ministry. But my first trip in Kenya, like I said, we were athletes and coaches, so we were doing a sports clinic. So we went and we built a basketball court, which was really, really cool. We brought actual hoops and watched them play their first game of 5-on-5, and we built a track and a volleyball pit, but we also shared the love of Jesus. And it was an incredible trip, but I felt like I was getting so much more from these children than I was giving. I mean, I could go on and on about these kids, but they're 7 years old, 6 years old, and they don't complain. They serve like I've never seen. They are in the sun all day. They're telling me what time it is by looking at the sun, which is just absolutely insane to me. But they just want to work and love and smile. And I learned so much. But I knew that there was more for me in Kenya. Like, I was loving what I was doing, but I was like, I know there's something more here for me. I know I have to go deeper. Like, what is it, Lord? And towards the end of the trip, so we were basically either at the school, which these kids are loved on. You know, they stay there. It's a boarding school. Or we were in our hotel, which was pretty nice. So that was kind of the extent of our trip. But towards the end of the trip, one of the last days, they said, we're going to take you through town. You know, we kind of just want to see, you want to see a different side of Eldoret, which is the town that we were in. And so I was sitting in the front seat of the Matatu, which is just like a van or public transportation, and I was sitting next to the founder of the ministry. His name is Chase. He's about 26 years old from South Dakota. And so we're sitting in the front, and he said, you see those boys over there, Tessa? And, you know, I'm seeing children all around, but I'm not really looking at them, right? You know, I'm just kind of sitting there, and he had me focus in on these two boys. And I was like, yeah. And he's like, they're street children. And I'm like, okay, you know, they're sitting on this big pile of garbage. And I've seen street children before, but it just hit me a little different. But what I noticed is they had bottles in their hands, and they were sticking it up to their noses. And I was like, what are they doing? And he said, in that bottle is glue, and they're addicted to huffing glue. And these kids were probably 6 or 7 years old. And it was the craziest thing. It was like I was in this car, but everything else stopped. And the Lord was like, what are you going to do about it? It was insane, and I couldn't even get words out. Like, I couldn't even process what I was thinking. And I said, all I could say to him was, what do you mean? And he said, that's their life. They huff glue all day. And so it basically is what I'm saying. It's just glue. They put it in alcohol bottles, and then they stick it in between their teeth all day, so the fumes are just going. So I was so wrecked by that. And we got to the school that day, and I couldn't function. I couldn't play with the kids. I couldn't do anything without thinking of those boys sitting on the garbage. Like, why aren't they here? Like, why don't they have the opportunity to educate themselves and to just be kids? And so eventually Chase was like, how about we just step aside? Because I was bawling, trying to play basketball with these kids. It was a mess. But, you know, he prayed over me, and just the whole time God's just stirring in me. You know, I was angry. I was like, when I say children, they're everywhere. You know, they're dirty and swaying back and forth. And no one's stopping them. No one's taking the bottles out of their nose, like away from their faces. No one's trying to pick them up, bring them to school. It's just the norm. And I was saying, God, why isn't anyone doing anything about it? And he says, why aren't you doing anything about it? You know? So it was a really humbling moment for me. And it was just a two-week trip, and I thought that's all it was going to be, you know, just a two-week trip. And the night before we were going to leave, I was like, I'm not getting on the plane. I called my mom from Kenya bawling. She wasn't much help. She just said, I know you'll do the right thing. And then later I come to find out that she couldn't hear me at all. She could just hear me bawling. So I just couldn't, I couldn't fathom getting on a plane, going back to my comfortable life after seeing what I've seen. And it was only just a little bit, I was soon to find out. But really wise counsel and just a prayer from a really good friend, it was really smart for me to come back home and figure out some things, you know, before I went back. And so I came back to the States crying through the airport as my mom picked me up. And I was in the States for 1 month before I got back on a plane. And because God's so good and he loves obedience and he will provide and provide and provide if you're just willing to obey and he'll give you favor, all of my expenses were paid for that second trip. I had someone reach out to me. I didn't ask. He said, I want to pay for your whole trip. I want to pay for all of your expenses while you're there. It's just incredible. So yeah, I got on to the plane by myself. I had no idea what I was going to do. Absolutely no idea. I just knew that I had to go meet these children. I had to go to the streets. I had to go where they were at. Obviously, I knew people in Kenya from the school, so I wasn't just going completely alone. Had a translator. But I really had no agenda. I just knew I couldn't not do something. I had never felt this type of compassion in my life. Like I said, I've traveled before and I've seen street children, but I've never been moved like this, and I knew it was the Lord stirring in me. So I had to go discover what that was. I didn't know what it looked like at all. So got on the plane, go to Kenya. My first, I'm a really like overzealous person, like super confident, think that I can change the world, you know. And so I'm like ready to go onto the streets and meet these boys. And mom, not my mom, the director of the school, we call her mom. She brought me to the market, which is a really, really crazy busy place. A lot of adults and children. Most of the adults are drunks. You know, that's how they make a living, selling alcohol, selling fruit. And so I could have never, ever prepared myself for what I saw that day. And I just remember we were driving in the car, and right, my window was down. And especially if you're a white person, an elder, they're going to come swarming. So the first boy comes up to my window, and he's not high yet, but he has his glue in his hand. And it's so strong that I had to literally go like this as he was talking to me in Swahili. And so he's, you know, asking for food and whatnot, and didn't have any, you know, just smiled. I can't talk with him. I don't speak his language. But we drove down about 2 more minutes, and he's chasing after us. And by the time that he got to our car and I got out of the car, he was so high, he couldn't even walk straight. That's how fast this glue takes over these children. So, okay, so I'm ready. I'm starting to walk out into the market, and I don't think I've ever been so terrified in my life. There was a basin, and it's known for where the street children go, and it is filled. They think about 700 kids go there a day, all with these bottles to their noses, putting trash over them to sleep. I couldn't speak to them because I didn't know their language. I'm trying to give them food, but they don't want food. They can't even speak to me. They're falling over. And I just closed up, right? I didn't know what to do. I actually went home that night and just curled up in a ball and just cried because I was thinking, what are you doing, Lord? Like, there's nothing I can do. Are you kidding me? This is way too big for me. I don't speak their language. I'm terrified. I'm not going back to the city. Like, I can't do that. I was struck in fear. And the next morning, thank God, my friend Steph, she was a missionary that was already there. She's like, you ready to go to the city? And inside I'm like, nope. But I'm like, yep. Super, super nervous. But God is so faithful. And where he brings you, he's going to bring you to the where you can handle. And he's going to give you situations that you can do. And so that next day we're walking around, and I stayed away from the market. It took me a little bit to go back there. But he brought me to this mall. And I think you can put the next picture up. And I met about 14 boys, and they were awesome. They were definitely were addicted to the glue, but they were much more functioning. They were super polite. They would get in line when I would give them food and say thank you. And I was able to have a translator, so I was able to get to know them, you know? So every single day, I was going back to the same place, and they would meet me at the same place. And, they were incredible. It was so cool to talk to them about their life and how they live, but then it got to more just like me talking to a little kid, like, what do you want to do when you grow up? And what's your dreams? And all that. And so, but there was one boy in particular that really, really struck my heart. And before going on this second trip, I really felt the Lord, you know, saying, like, you can't save them all right now, you know? And before I left, my mom did say, like, Tessa, it could be one kid, you know? And so you can go to the next slide, too. Thank you. This is Meshik. The instant I saw him, I heard the Lord say, that's him. And I could feel it, you know? And even watching him among all of his buddies, he was just so different. You know, a lot of them are completely abandoned, don't have families. Some of them are just hustlers. They go home every night and they come on the streets. But I knew this one was something special. And he wore this huge jacket. Like, that jacket went way below his knees. So we called him the professor. But he had this skin disease called scabies, and he had had it for so long, and it was so bad that when the sun touched it, it burned him. So thank God scabies doesn't go onto your face. So, but the rest of his body was absolutely filled if you were to take it off. And so he wore that long jacket. And you can see in the first picture, he's pretty high. The first interaction I had with him, he didn't smile, you know, he didn't really do much of anything. But as every day I went back and I met with him and I started creating this relationship with him, eventually I took him out to lunch and we started having like one-on-one conversations. And he was able to tell me his story. And so he thinks he's about 12 years old. I would probably guess that too. Of course, he doesn't know. He doesn't know his birthday. He doesn't know when he was born. He has been on the street for about 7 years. So when he was 4 years old, his parents left to find jobs and left him with his grandmother. And then his grandmother was a drunk, so she would beat him and gave him to his aunt and uncle, who told him that he just wasn't wanted, that he wasn't important. So the street was a better life for him than home. So he had been on the street for about 7 years in this picture. And so, you know, we prayed a lot with him. We were able to hang out with him one-on-one, and eventually I got to the point where I was able to have a serious conversation with him and be like, Meshik, do you want to get better? Like, do you want to do education? You know, as much as you would think every kid on the street would say that, a lot of them choose the streets because they're used to the streets. They can hustle on the streets. They can get food on the streets. They make their money on the streets, and they're not used to structure and people telling them what to do. So we had a really serious conversation, and he said, yeah, I want to go. And, you know, I wanted to know if he was serious about it. So I said, do you want to go right now? And he said, yeah, I want to go right now. So we got in a cab right then and there, and we brought him to the rescue center, which was just in Eldoret. It's run by the government, so it's really run down. It's not a great place to live, to be honest. But, yeah, watching a 12-year-old go through withdrawal is absolutely insane. It made me so worried that he wasn't going to stick it out, especially because I had to go back to the States. And, of course, I think it's all on me, but finally God's like, would you chill? Like, I'm in control. Like, I'm emailing every day. Is he still there? Is he, you know? And the Lord's like, I'm faithful. I told you that's him, you know? So the day that I met Meshik, I went back to the home I was staying at. And before I went to Kenya in the first place, God gave me Isaiah 61. And I was in my apartment in the States. And this was like a few months before going to Kenya. So I didn't know why or what Isaiah 61 was going to mean to me. But he said, go to Isaiah 61 and read it out loud. So I'm in my apartment reading it out loud, and I just start weeping. And I didn't understand what was going on. But the passage, it's a really amazing passage. You can go look at it. But it says in it that the Lord has anointed you to reach out to the needy, to comfort the brokenhearted, to bind up the brokenhearted. And then the last little section that really hit me said, I've called you to comfort those who mourn and grieve in Zion. And so once we got home that day after meeting Meshik, I was super excited just to keep getting to know him. And so I reached out to my friend and I said, let me read this passage that the Lord has given me. And I didn't really know what it was meaning until right now. And so I'm reading it out loud, and she said, read that again. So I read it again. And she's like, Tessa, are you putting two and two together? And I was like, no. So the end passage, like I said, to comfort in those who grieve in Zion. The mall that I met all these boys at was called Zion Mall. And in that moment, I knew that it was the Lord's plan. I knew it was Jesus. And so now that brings me kind of into what I'm going to talk about, but that's kind of how the House of Zion was born. All right. Could you actually go back to the picture of Meshik, the two pictures? So, yeah, like I said, that was the first day I met him. And then the next picture is just 1 week after he was in the rescue center. You know, the director of the rescue center really loves Jesus, praise God. And I was talking to her about what she needs, and she said, of course we need more food, we need more money, we need more clothes, but what we need is hands. It's incredible what a little bit of physical touch can do to these children, and just some encouragement and affirmation. Yeah, just 1 week. I just love that picture so much. But you can go to the next one as well. This is a praise story now, because Meshik went through all of his rehabilitation, and it took only 3 months, and then he got put into the sponsorship program. And he's now in school. He had to start in nursery because he's never been to school before. So he's this big 12-year-old in nursery at St. Jacob's, the school that the ministry works for. And a little shout out to my parents because they're his sponsor. And that's the Christmas gift that they sent him this year. So I think, you know, the day that I got the email saying that Meshik is good to go to school and they sent me a picture of him in a school uniform was just another moment of realizing how good our Father is. Honestly, this is insane how fast this happened. It had nothing to do with my power, nothing at all. Jesus had his hand on Meshik his whole life. He knew I was going to meet him at Zion Mall. He knew he was going to be the one, and he knew he was going to be in school someday. And so this picture is just a reminder of how faithful our Father is. For him to tell me that that's him, and all you have to do is obey, and he'll just do the rest, is just absolutely incredible. So going into, you can go to the next slide, going into a little bit more about what I'm doing now. So my second trip to Kenya was about 2 weeks, and before I was in the airport about to come back home. It was hard to get back on the plane again, but this time I had a mission and I knew what I was going to do, so I knew I had to get back to the States to get it started, so it was a little easier. But the founder of the ministry, he emails me while I'm at the airport coming home, and he said, you know, Tessa, we've been waiting a long time to find someone with a passion for these street children, and we've been wanting to fill more aspects of our ministry as the orphans and the widows, and he just said, we've been looking for someone. Are you that someone? And instantly I wanted to say, let me pray about it, because that was a comfort to me. You know, like, I don't know, that's way too big of a commitment. And how can I just make that commitment right now? And again, the Lord is just like, how much confirmation do I have to give you? I've brought you to Kenya. I've given you this fire inside. I've brought Meshik, you know, I've rescued Meshik. Like, and so in that instant, I just said yes. And in that instant, he said, all right, we want to build a home for these children. We're going to give you the reins. And you can start planning and start doing what you want to do if you're committed to this, if you want to be part of our ministry. And so for the past 8 months-ish, I've been working on a business plan for the House of Zion. And so this is the mission statement. The House of Zion's mission is to take in, support, and care for lost children with the love of Jesus Christ while encouraging them to seek God and discover their true identity and potential in Him. I think my biggest heart in this whole project is the idea of identity. These children, a lot of them have never had the opportunity to be children. They don't know what they're good at. They don't know what they enjoy, what they love. They don't know Jesus, at least most of them, I don't think. And of course, I want to bring them in and help them heal physically, you know, emotionally and spiritually, but I just want to give them the opportunity to be children. I want them to discover who Jesus is, of course, but I want them to discover themselves. And so this home is not going to be necessarily an educational home. It's going to be a transitional home where we take the kids from the streets, put them into this home, and this is where they go through the rehabilitation, the counseling, but also the discovery. And when we feel they're good and able, then we'll transfer them into our sponsorship program through Simba, and that's when we'll get sponsors from the States. So this home is just the transition home. It is my biggest heart that one day it'll be completely run by Kenyans, because it's not about me and my face, or it's not about Simba. It's about providing job opportunities for Kenyans as well. And these children, they need Kenyan role models. They can't see just white people being the saviors. And there's so many good Kenyans as well. So right now, where are we now with it? Well, I have completed the business plan, and I've proposed a business plan to a lot of different people. We have found the land that we are interested in building on. And so the land's about $40,000. So we're just in the process of talking to people about it. My plan is when we get the money and when I feel the Lord, I will move over to Kenya and be there for as long as the Lord sees fit. Like I said, of course, I don't want to be running it for my whole life. I just want to oversee it, and I want Kenyans to be the ones running it. So, so that's the House of Zion, and that's my mission and my dream and my vision, but it's really the Lord's vision and His dream and His mission, and I'm so unqualified. I've never been a business person. It's been amazing just to see the Lord's faithfulness helping me through this process. But yeah, if you have interest, you can go to the next slide. In just asking me more questions, obviously there's so much to say. I had to cut out a lot of details, a lot of God's miracles that I saw, but totally okay. But you guys can totally email me at tesswells09@gmail.com or talk to me after the service. The Simba Ministry website is up there. And if you have any interest in just right now, I'm going to Kenya in May to get kind of more details pinned down, like figures of what I need to raise as a missionary, what we need for the House of Zion. So right now, we're just looking for like seed money for like the land. If you have any interest in donating, you can go do it online as well. But then also, eventually, I'm going to be raising my own funds for a missionary and also monthly funds for the House of Zion, and I'll be sending out monthly updates and emails. Do you want to pass out those cards, Mom? And so if you're interested, like, this is not a commitment at all. It's just you can check a box if you may have interest in supporting or just even getting a monthly update. If you just want to raise your hand, I don't think everyone needs one, but you can just hand them to me after the service, and when I start collecting money to like find support for myself and for the House of Zion, once we really get those figures in place, then I'll contact you. And it's not a commitment whatsoever. It's just kind of the next step in where I need to go. That kind of wraps it up. Thank you guys so much for listening to...